Hello and welcome to another episode of Untrue Crime, where fiction meets felonies. I'm Belle DeWing.
And I'm Alexandria Parker. Today's episode includes content warnings for drug addiction, drugging children, and child abuse.
This is your fair warning that this podcast uses explicit language before someone walks in at the wrong time. As a last warning, today's episode includes content warnings for drug addiction, drugging children, and child abuse. Let's get this started, shall we?
We shall.
The dirt is magical. The dirt, you say?
The dirt, I say.
The dirt! It's the dirt! The dirt is magic.
Is this about dirt? Because I have an episode about dirt coming up.
No.
Okay, good.
Too much dirt theming. That's gonna be in our end of season Q&A. Would you guys stop making episodes about dirt?
No.
The answer is always going to be no. We love dirt. Eerd is a world of magic because of the dirt. Yes, it's the dirt. That is what is very special about this planet, is that the dirt is magical. Because the dirt is magical, the things that grow from it are raised by this magic. They grow into it, express it into the world, use the properties in their own processes, woven into their leaves, flowers, and thorns. There are hundreds, perhaps thousands of species of plants, all with different properties of magic, different uses, different functions. The animals are not magic, but they do use the magic of the world around them. Jaguars learn to carry around a jewel stick, as gnawing on it made them move faster. Mice learn to eat yona leaves, as it temporarily makes them invisible. There was a particularly smart octopus that once trapped prey in a magical shield. The same applies to humans, to a higher extreme, of course. Potions are not rare in the slightest, as commercialized as soda in our world. Cars run off a liquid made from plants with magic. Their electricity is not a power plant, but an electric ecosystem. A cry for help is best articulated by a newborn baby. When adults cry for help, there is not always a response, but when a baby cries, adults will respond, often even when the baby is not their own. Babies hardly ever cry for no reason. From the moment they're born, humans understand how to trust. Sprung into a huge, confusing, brand new world, they have to figure out how to best communicate what their body is saying to them to the world and hope someone shows up. Figuring this out takes time. Some will cry with nothing wrong, some will not cry when everything is going wrong, but it's new, so who can blame them? Eventually, the baby learns to trust when they are feeling wrong. Should they cry, an adult will come to help them. They trust their yelling, they trust their adults, but most importantly, they trust their bodies. Their stomach hurts because they are hungry. Their eyes hurt because they are tired. Their ears hurt because there is too much sound. Their arm hurts because of a cut. If there is one thing that children know, it's trusting their instincts because their instincts got them through a time when they can only eat through figuring out the loud sound that they had to procure. Every kid has heard it. Don't take candy from strangers.
Don't get candy from strangers.
Every kid has questioned it. But why? Why could they not trust themselves to take the candy if their body wanted it? Why was something that would make them feel happy to be denied? Every kid's heard the same tune in a different chord, too. Don't get into a white van. Why just the white van? Why was being inside the car not safe when the inside of their car was? Why were these specific adults not to be trusted when their instinct, which had worked really well for them, told them that it was okay? Oftentimes, when a kid asks why, people dismiss them, but it's difficult for us adults to remember that they truly don't know sometimes. 6 years ago, I could drive a car, so of course the emergency brake is clear as day to me. 6 years ago, that kid that's asking about it didn't exist. Our brains are so much more developed than theirs. Perhaps they are just trying to get a rise out of us, but on the chance that they're trying to learn, why hinder them? Now, imagine their shock when these two confusing phrases were combined. Don't take candy from a white van. Well, if they shouldn't bother the adults with asking why, they had to get an answer somehow. A sweet tooth and a dose of curiosity is an irresistible pair to a kid that can only think about that experience once it begins. Hinahata lived in a big city where the buildings touched the sky. She'd been born to and raised by Hiyori Hada, who had been born and raised there too. The area knew Hiyori and Hinahata, and Hina and Hiyori Hada knew the area. Hina had always been promised that when she turned 7, she would be able to walk herself to school.
7?
Yes.
Alone?
Yes.
What year is this?
Well, it's not in Earth, so I couldn't tell you which year they're in and where it determines with Earth.
You're letting a 7-year-old? Really? I wouldn't do that. Not to judge parents, but...
I think I explain it further on, but it is based off of, like, more Asian cultures where their kids do tend to walk to bus stops alone and get on the school bus alone. Okay, so the universe is
like, that's normal there. That's not just like parent neglect.
Yes, this is completely normalized.
Okay, all right. Never let your child walk by themselves if they are in New York City, everyone.
No, please God, no. That's such a bad idea.
Things are not as safe and friendly in America.
She often tried to convince her mom that she could go earlier, but her mother maintained that she would walk with her until she was 7. In an effort to let her go earlier, Hina would trace her mother's tattoo of their area's map, explaining how she would get to and from her school. She was a smart kid and had a good memory, and since the schools in that country were from 4 to 18, she'd go there unless they moved, and she'd been there for as long as she could remember. As big as the area was, the country itself was safe, and the people knew the hottest. You're very worried about this kid.
I was very worried when I... It is wrong of me to just initially assume we are in a version of the U.S. That was wrong of me, and I see that. But also, if it was, that would have been a bad choice. So...
You were raised to know that in your city that was a bad choice. And therefore, yes, you have the pretext of that.
Yeah, and I foolishly assumed that my unsafe experiences applied to this world, which is not based on where I live. And that is a good thing.
It is a good thing. It is a good thing. She'd tell her the names of the shopkeepers that she passed, because on a really good day, they'd give her something on her way past. Her favorite was a bakery, which, if Hina hadn't had time for breakfast, would hand her a bagel with a spread to energize her on the house. Her best friends, Nori and Miwa, lived on her route as well, and they got to walk alone, so it just wasn't fair that she had to wait for 7. On Hina's 7th birthday, the whole world knew that she was going to get to walk to school without her mom that day.
Oh no.
You sense danger.
I know, I'm assuming the worst, but then again, I know you've said it's safe, I know you said it's okay for her to walk when she's 7, but I know what we write here, and somehow I think that my fear is right.
She'd told just about everyone that she'd passed the day prior, and everyone that attended her birthday party was well aware. Herself, Nori, and Miwa had spent the whole party talking about how fun it was going to be to travel together. They talked about how they'd do hopscotch when they passed chalk on the ground, and how Hina could do her homework at Miwa's house instead of having to go back to her mom's work to do it. The parents around her had calmed her mother, Hiyori's, nerves. It was normal for kids their age, and Hina was a smart girl. Not only that, but not having to plan her lunch around who was picking her kid up was going to give her so much more energy. Hiyori was an only parent who happened to be an engineer, which was a difficult job to navigate having her kid sitting next to her for the last few hours of her workday. Though Hina was well-behaved, it often gave her anxiety that she could get into something, either because it would hurt her daughter or set her back. Worst case scenario, both. Hina began walking to school when she was 7, and by the time she was 7 1/4, a part of her town had grown used to it. She got her breakfast in the morning, went off to school, and she had a few hours after school that she was allowed to use as she wished, so long as she didn't have errands to run or chores to do. She often went over to friends' homes to do homework before the three would play. Sometimes they'd take their allowances and go to a close-by arcade or the local ice cream store. Hina would go home about 30 minutes before her mom got out of work, and she'd simply wait until Hiyori came home. She was very punctual, as accounted for by her friend's parents, who explained that she always made a point to say goodbye and tell them that she needed to get home to her mom. It wasn't until Hina was 8 1/2 that Hiyori noticed her behavior was changing. Her otherwise punctual daughter had begun slowly coming home at different times. It began with her coming home at almost the same time as Hina, but slowly but surely, she began coming home after Hiyori. 5 minutes to 20 to an hour over the span of 3 months. During this period, her kid began complaining about wanting something sweet, in which her mother responded that she wasn't to have sweets unless it was a special occasion. She continuously whined about it. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, she was always complaining of not finding something sweet on her plate. The first night that Hina came home an hour late, Hiyori sat her kid down to explain that she needed to be home by 6 at the latest. She asked why Hina was staying out, and Hina responded that she was with friends. She called both Nori and Miwa's parents, and both of them said that the girls had been going over to their fourth friend's house after school, whose name was Aya. Hiyori contacted her parents, who said that the girls had just recently become friends, but that Hina was sweet. The parents discussed for a while, and Hiyori stressed the importance of Hina being home on time. The parents understood and promised to send her home earlier. About 2 days later, Hiyori woke to get water in the middle of the night and found a trail of brown sugar back to Hina's room, in which she found Hina with a nearly empty sugar jar eating it by the fistful. She confiscated the jar immediately and called in an emergency for work.
That's so weird.
What?
It's so weird.
What?
This is...
The kid eating sugar by the fistful? Yeah.
I mean, it's weird, like, but I get why it's also not weird, but, like, it's weird. Because you once told me that you should be very concerned if you ever see a person eating mass quantities of something that is not typically, like, straight food, or it's, an ingredient. I think what we were specifically talking about was baking soda, because I made a joke about how there was nothing to eat in your pantry except baking soda, and I said... No one would eat large amounts of baking soda. And then you mentioned that sometimes when there was a deficiency of certain vitamins or something, in that context, in an eating disorder context, but if there's a deficiency of certain vitamins, people will just turn to that direct ingredient and crave it and just eat a ton of it, like baking soda. And I was like,
oh. It's cornstarch. People will turn to cornstarch a lot.
Cornstarch.
Eat cornstarch a lot. It's very peculiar. It's not good for you. You shouldn't be eating it. But there are a lot of ingredients that people will just consume straight from it just to get the nutrition that they need. And they have no idea that they're doing it. It's really unique because, you know, the body only really can process that I need this chemical to work. It's cool that our brains can go, oh, let me just eat straight baking soda because that makes me feel good. When,
yeah,
no, like it doesn't.
And I get that that's probably not what's going on here. And it's very different for sugar as opposed to other things because sugar is so addictive and stuff. And it is something people genuinely like eating when they are not deprived of it.
And sugar is an important element to have in your diet. So people needing sugar is totally a valid thing.
But we don't necessarily need fistfuls of brown sugar.
In which, if you don't know how brown sugar is made... It is made with molasses and white sugar, and molasses is just pretty much liquefied sugar, so.
Yeah, it's basically sugar times 10.
It is, yeah, and that's part of why this is so concerning. In the morning, she called Hina's school to tell them that she was ill, and she brought Hina to the doctor. She explained her odd behavior, and the doctor suggested that they both see a psychiatrist. Hiyori argued that there was no way her child was eating fistfuls of straight brown sugar implied that she was physically healthy and asked her to look into it. The doctor said that she should look into therapy first, and Hiyori continued to be persistent. Nothing was done, so she took Hina to the ER, where she was better able to advocate for tests. The ER also brought a psychologist in for both Hina and Hiyori, but they found it unnecessary after her blood test came back. Hiyori was pulled aside and told that her daughter had been drugged with an addictive, hypnotic, magical drug called duropoline. It was harvested from the sap of a faraway tree called the duropop, which was illegal to grow in the country. Its street name, however, was named hard candy, as it was typically put into candies to have someone else consume. Someone had given Hinahata drugged candy.
This is every white suburban mom's worst dream on Halloween.
It truly is.
This is what they fear. This and razor blades and Kit Kats.
It's so obscure. It's but it's very much like I can imagine in this universe the Facebook post of like, be careful of the duropoline. You can see it because it's mildly reflective.
I found duropoline in my child's candy basket. They have a picture of a completely normal Starburst. It's definitely fine.
I like to think that it's also, you can't feed your kids name brand sugar cookies because they put duropoline in their recipes, so their kids will become addicted. It's illegal. They actually cannot do that. They also cannot get the ingredients to do that.
Like glass and lip balm.
Yeah. Her sugar cravings had been referred to as a sugar search, which was how her body was trying to seek what she thought the drug was, sugar. Of course, law enforcement was quickly informed. Hiyori was questioned thoroughly, and as their apartment was searched even more so, but both came up blank. Hina was questioned by a child psychologist, but she refused to explain where and when she had eaten candy in the past 3 days. Hina, against her character, became hostile. She yelled, screamed, and hit at the psychologist until she was left alone. She demanded candy again and began to swear at those that were not her mother as the withdrawal set in. She remained civil to her mother, but by staying quiet and not speaking to her. She didn't seem opposed to her presence, but she only spoke to her when she was asked a direct question. Hina mumbled rather than spoke and continued not to answer questions about eating candy. Hiyori directed the officers to the parents of her best friends, Nori and Miwa. They were both pulled from school when their parents quoted that they were also acting odd and given a blood test. Both of them had traces of duropoline in their system and had similar reactions to the child psychologist. The parents were questioned, their homes searched, but it all came back clear. This left one option, the parents of Aya, the reason that she was coming home late. Aya's parents seemed completely unaware of what was happening and said that their daughter had been acting normally. They declined a home search. During their interviews, they mentioned that they were both not home during the day and that they didn't know Hina, Nori, nor Miwa very well. They'd met them on their workdays at home, but they didn't really know what the team of girls got up to. They seemed like fine young girls, and they didn't pay them, nor their daughter, much mind when they said that they wanted to go to the park. That was fine. It was a safe part of town. One of Aya's parents then mentioned that they were often at the park for hours at a time, unsupervised. They requested to do a blood test for Aya, but the parents, once again, declined. Law enforcement promptly began working on getting the permits to search their home as well as get a blood test for Aya, but in the meantime, address the school.
I am going to say something very bold.
Okay.
I don't suspect these parents at all. I don't suspect them one bit. And I know what you're doing here with the they declined a home search and they declined the blood test. Look, if somebody came at to my house being like, are you drugging children? My first thought is going to be like, no, you have no evidence that I'm drugging children. Go away. You know, like, I'm not going to be like, yes, please come into my home with your dirty shoes and walk on my carpet. And, okay, this is very presumptuous. No. Actually, I'm a total pushover. If the police came and asked to search my home, I'd be like, please,
yeah.
Please, God. But I don't think that there is anything wrong with declining a home search or the blood test or anything. And not to be overly American, but they are within their rights to do so. And I believe in those rights.
Now, I want you to view this a little bit differently. Let me paint the scene for you.
Okay.
You don't always work from home, but you sometimes work from home. Your daughter pretty much has free reign over the town. And the town's a... The city... They live in a city. The city's a very, very safe city. There's no reason to believe that anything is happening. Your daughter spontaneously makes three new friends
who were
previously also friends with each other. A few months later, the police come to your door.
Oh no.
And they say that these three children all have traces of drug in their system. And they ask you if they can drug test your child. And you say, no.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think of it that way. Are they like declining, like, no, you can't have a blood test? Like, you can't take my child to blood test her? Or are they like, no, we're going to blood test her?
Aya has been declined for a blood test. They're not letting her get tested. Stop searching us. Leave us alone.
Oh, so she's like, they're like, no. Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of weird. All right. I'll give them that. I thought that you were saying like, oh, well, they declined to let them take her for a blood test. I'm like, I would decline her too. I would take her to the doctor myself. If I would
have a blood test. With a police search, I would definitely be like, yeah, let's go to the hospital. Let's go get my kid and let's go to the hospital.
Yeah, okay, all right. I'm now enlightened once again.
We learn more about the police force later in the episode, and that will make you trust them a little bit more. Their school was not opposed to being searched, nor were their teachers against being interviewed. They said that they had noticed the girls acting strange and that their homework was coming back different than how it usually was. Hina, Nori, and Miwa weren't particularly studious, but they did turn in neat homework with all of the work done on it. Aya was sparingly turning in homework, but turned in enough to keep her grades up. Her parents didn't seem concerned with it either, despite their teachers having brought it up in multiple meetings. Hina, Nori, and Miwa's homework was not being turned in sparingly, but poorly. It was clearly rushed through and had handwriting that they didn't recognize occasionally. The homework with the mystery handwriting was taken in as evidence. They asked about their behavior. Their teacher quoted that the girls, whilst not impolite, were chatterboxes. They adored each other and didn't want to wait to talk to each other until after class. They were redirected once they were told to pay attention and often apologized for their interruption. Nowadays, they continued to talk, but they did not care that they were interrupting. When they were told not to talk, it would only work for a minute, and when they were told to be quiet, they'd become aggressive to the teacher. When they were separated, they passed notes to each other, but whenever she tried to confiscate one, they ate it.
Yes, I...
It's very a kid thing. I have seen kids do that.
I did that once. I was the child that once ate a note, and there wasn't even anything on it. I just thought if I ate it, there wouldn't be any proof that I did it. I didn't know that wasn't how it worked. I didn't realize that in third grade, you don't get to stand trial and be like, show me the evidence. This is just speculation. What witness said, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They were also now gnawing on their pencils and were sneaking candy into class, but none of it was hard candy. They seemed constantly hungry, and all of them asked at least twice a class how long it was until lunch and what dessert they were having that day. None of them seemed particularly happy anymore, but they were in a better mood after lunch. She gave them a better timeline as to when this happened. They'd been like this for 4 months, with the behavior getting progressively worse. It was around that time that they had befriended Aya.
Okay. Okay, new theory.
New theory.
I am completely revoking what I said earlier, and I think that these parents are running a magic meth lab.
Oh, wow. You turned on them. Took you one paragraph.
I have completely changed my mind. Earlier, I was like, they have a right to tell the police to get a warrant. And now I have decided they are drug brewers.
They're drug addicts, the drug pushers.
The druggies.
But why? Why would they drug these children, in your theory?
Well, you don't have to intentionally drug the children. Like, if you've got a meth lab, and I'm applying meth to this as if it's the same thing, I know nothing about this fake drug. But, like,
let me remind you, it is hypnotic and addictive.
Okay, well, for a lot of drugs, meth, cocaine, others, I don't know, I don't do drugs. If you are in the lab and there's some kind of leak and stuff, you can still, like, get it into your kid's system and stuff, and in your system, and it can be really bad for all of you, because there's drugs in your system.
Yeah.
So I think that's what, I don't think that they've been, like, feeding the children drugs, but I think maybe the children have been hanging out in the house, and there's some kind of issue somewhere where they're getting into their system some other way, or they found the stash of drug candy there and they've been eating that. But either way, I think that they're cooking, what's it called,
durapalene.
They're cooking durapalene.
Okay, I like it. Though it hadn't gotten them far, the information was all good. They hadn't been skipping school, and they've been getting consistently worse over the past 4 months.
As they get more and more of it in their systems.
Yes, precisely. There was a link to befriending Aya, and with that, they were able to get a permit to search their home. Their home came back clean, and the interrogation with the parents did as well. Aya, however, came back with durapalene in her bloodstream. She, too, was going through sugar searches and deep cravings, but as her parents didn't pay her as much attention as Hina Nori or Miwas did, they hadn't taken much notice of her behavior. The three girls were isolated in the hospital so they could begin the process of recovery. All four were heavily monitored, and anything that struck a nurse, doctor, parent, or law enforcement officer's odd was recorded as potential evidence. The investigation, due to the reference that the girls were going to the park, led there. For the people of our world, it was a park that people would travel to get to. There were 6 different sections of play structures that increased in difficulty, surrounding the 3-story building in the middle, which had first aid, a children's library, an indoor play section, and places for the kids to relax. It was well monitored, as they had 2 land-based lifeguards, so to say, on duty, one covering 3 different sections of the structures. For their world, though, this was nothing new, something quite average for big cities such as this, as their kids were allowed to be more independent, and their needs were deeply valued in societies, more so than adults' needs were. It wasn't odd for children to go out to their own parks, since they were children's social meetup locations most of the time, and often resided near schools, law enforcement, or fire stations, residential areas, or daycares. The thought that crime against children could be happening in one of these locations seemed absurd, and by the investigators' report, they'd almost hit a dead end. The drug-sniffing animals couldn't find a single hard candy, the lifeguards said that there hadn't been many quotable incidents, and the first aid records had nothing about kids dealing with a drug addiction. However, on their way out, they were asked about their arrival by another concerned parent who had come to collect his child. They'd informed him that they were looking into something in the area, and the parent asked if they'd seen his kid. He said that his kids said they'd be back 2 hours ago, that they were coming to this park, but that they hadn't come back. The law in this universe had a priority list for law enforcement, in which kidnapping was one of the highest regards, which meant that their active investigation had to be put on pause while they pursued the missing child. The child was heading home, and upon seeing their parent with the law, had beyond what could be described as a meltdown. There was screaming, throwing, hitting, threats of death that were far too adult, threats that couldn't possibly have come out of a six-year-old's mouth naturally. The child, unfortunately, had to be sedated by medical professionals that were called onto the scene and was brought to the hospital. In his pockets were strawberry, orange, vanilla, and blueberry hard candies. Upon testing, each one of them was laced with duropoline. The parent was open to investigation, and nothing came back on him either. However, he did provide the turning point in the investigation. Enraged that someone would drug his baby, his child, he began rapidly reaching out to every parent he could, asking if their child had been acting oddly. In just 28 hours, he had rounded up 6 duropoline-drugged children, their parents, and had gotten them into the hospital. Again,
that's awesome.
He really committed. He said, this will never happen again. I don't know what this man does, but he figured that out so fast. He heard my child's being drugged, and he said, no one else shall suffer this pain such as I have. I stand with him.
I like him.
Again, the parents were investigated, but nothing was found. However, with so many of these kids in the hospital, doctors hesitantly request that they be put in a monitored room together in an attempt to get them to discuss where they had gotten these drugs. It was a risky decision, but they could be easily sedated should things go awry. The plan was to select 2 children with seemingly no connection to one another, place them in a room, feign an emergency, and observe from cameras. Aya was one of the children chosen for this. She was 8, female, was in a different school than the other child, and was in a different grade. The other was Ozaru, 10, male, different grade, different school, went to a different park, one of the 6 brought in latest at that point in time. Their only similarities were that they had shown significant resistance to talking to adults about their situations, and that they had both been drugged with duropoline. It took the children, once alone, a few minutes to begin talking to one another. Ozaru's first question was if Aya had candy, and when she responded no, she then asked if he had candy. He responded the same. The 2 went quiet for another short period of time, in which doctors and investigators thought they might have hit another dead end. A nurse left to gather them, when Ozaru and Aya began playing together, speaking in a code of sorts while they played with a cheetah doll and a hippo doll. And I quote, "What if the big hippo doesn't give us candy because we can't go to the river?" said Aya. "I don't think he'd do that. He's really nice to us. It's only the weird ones that he makes fight." "Yeah, okay." And he said that if we ever get stuck somewhere, that we can call him, so like I feel like he'll probably be okay that we were stuck somewhere. Maybe we'll have to do something big for candy again because we didn't call him though. Like what? Unfortunately, their conversation was cut short as the nurse opened the door. The children refused to speak or comply with the nurse that had entered and threw their stuffed animals at them. The investigators and doctors let out a collective sigh, though good information was gathered. There was someone else in the mix, someone that was being called the Big Hippo. It's a silly, dorky name. When the parents were gathered and asked about this figure, a few responded saying that their kids had an imaginary friend named Big Hippo. The kids, when in a good mood, would mention that Big Hippo didn't like certain things, or did like certain things. For example, Big Hippo didn't like pictures, the rain, or strawberries. What Big Hippo did mention liking, however, was candy, confirmed by 2 different sets of parents whose children had individually mentioned Big Hippo loving candy. This being was quoted to want all the candy to himself, but if they were nice to him and did a good job on their chores, they'd get candy too. The parents reminisce on dismissing this idea, as having their children being inspired to do chores was a blessing. However, it quickly dawned on them in that moment that perhaps their children were not doing their chores. Investigators could find nothing of crimes linked to a quote-unquote big hippo.
Sorry.
It's such a dorky street name that it couldn't exist. Imagine going up to your colleague, you're an investigator, investigating the drugging of children. You're like, have you ever heard of Big Hippo? And your colleague just looks at you.
Worse. Imagine you're trying to buy drugs and you're like, I got the shit. You got the shit? Yeah. So when do I get to meet him? Meet who? I want to meet the man in charge. The man behind the operation. who built this ring for us. I want to meet Big Hippo.
It's such a dorky name.
Like, or like, you know, you mess up in your little crime ring and, you know, somebody's beating you up. You're on the ground. You're bleeding. These are your last moments. Man holds up a gun and puts it to your temple and you say, "Why are you doing this?" They say, "Big Hippo said you went too far this time." And they just take you out.
Big Hippo wants this.
Sorry, man. It's not personal. Yours come from the top. You don't mean. Yeah. Big Hippo found out.
All I want for Christmas is a hippopotamus.
I hate that song, actually.
It's one of the parents that are dealing with Big Hippo.
Like, my child has been drugged by a man named Big Hippo. Tell me that's not the most pedophile name you have ever heard in
if
your whole
someone
life.
Came up to me and was like, "I'm Big Hippo," I'd be like, "Oh, you're a pedophile."
Yeah, for sure.
So I know what crimes you've committed.
I'd be like, "Is that a sex thing? I don't..."
I'm not gonna call you that, dude.
That makes me really uncomfortable.
Listen, you put some respect on my name. Say it!
Big Hippo. On your knees. I want you to say my name. I won't do it. Say it! Big, say it louder. Big, look me in the eye. Big Hippo. Like, hey, go take that guy out. Will do. What was that? I said yes. Yes. What? Yes, Big Hippo. I can't move on before I come up with more of these.
This is so funny, I'm crying. Orders come from upstream. Big Hippo sends his regards.
He'll be sleeping with the hippos. You got a request to make, you know how to ask for it. What do you say? I want some hard candy. Big Hippo.
Why are you doing this? How could you have turned on me? You know what they say up the river. I'm just a hungry, hungry hippo.
You know what they say? One of the most dangerous animals in the world is? What? It's not what you'd expect. It's not a lion. Not a bear. The most dangerous animal in the world comes from the rivers of Africa. It's a hippo. And you know what they call me? What?
Big Hippo. Okay, I have to go on. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep going with this. And it's going to be the rest of the episode.
I have more, so we have to keep going.
There were no admissions of evidence from recent criminals and organizations. There weren't hippos graffiti. Oh my god, I'm still talking about the hippo lore.
I didn't realize that.
Okay. There were no admissions of evidence from recent criminals and organizations. There weren't hippos graffitied onto the streets.
See that? See that symbol right there? That's the mark of Big Hippo. You're in hippo territory now, bitch.
You're in dangerous waters. Hippo water.
This is my safari. You can't handle the heat? Get out of the safari. I'm sorry. I said I'd stop.
Seems like you're from the rainforest, Jaguar. Out of your territory. This is the land of the Big Hippo, bro.
Like, you got a little far from the Pride Lands, huh? These are my grasslands.
Oh god, I'm so going.
It's 10 pages, we have to keep reading.
The only people that were mentioning Big Hippo were the kids.
Keep reading. Don't stop. I won't be able to stop laughing, so just keep going. Don't even worry about me.
Okay. The teachers were contacted, and they said the name sounded familiar, but it was always treated as more of a godlike figure, which wasn't odd for kids.
The Church of Hippo.
I mean, like, for kids it tracks, because kids will treat, like, Moana like their god.
Hail hippo, full of grace.
Do 10 hail hippos.
I have to finish this. I can't. I'm not going to make it through the next sentences, so you just have to keep reading. I can't even make it.
Okay.
My face is so red.
You know it's a good crafted name when it's definitely something that kids would love saying. Because we can't stop making fun of it.
Look at me.
I'm crying. I'm crying from laughter. I made Big Hippo. I'm not going to try to use my serious voice for this one. I'm just going to go.
I'm going to make my serious face.
Their mentions were limited to phrases.
I can't. Belle can't read this sentence. And I don't know if I can either, but I'll try. Their mentions were limited to phrases such as Big Hippo wouldn't like that. Or Big Hippo's gonna get you while playing tag. One teacher, however, came forward and said that her kids had once mentioned Big Hippo sees you. And pointed to the camera.
A few children laughed, which caused the class to start
Oh my god, Big Hippo like Big Brother! Oh my god.
I've never seen Big Brother, so I can't help you.
No, but Big Brother is from 1984 by George Orwell, and it's like the term for the government, and the whole thing is can see out all the cameras.
Big Hippo.
So you actually made a very clever reference there. Big Hippo sees you.
Oh, thank you. I meant to do that.
Yes, you did.
Okay. A few children laughed, which caused the class to start referencing this Big Hippo figure, but only the first child was one affected by the Duropolium. The other children were simply jumping onto this figure, thinking it would be funny, which it is.
It is.
They're not wrong.
You're right.
Which meant that not much of it could be taken seriously, besides the Big Hippo sees you comment. The school's security system was thoroughly checked, however, there was no trace of undocumented entry from a third party. Due to the extent of kids' creativity and their inherent love for figures and phrases, it seemed as though they'd hit another dead end. The recovery process from any addiction is not simple, especially not for kids who don't understand the situation in full. Duropolium was a markedly difficult addiction to overcome, and the kids' recovery reflected that. There were good days, there were bad days, there were days that were just okay. It was slow and painful for everyone involved. However, the first three girls, Hina, Nori, and Miwal, were the earliest to begin to recover, though they were still quite early in their recovery process, into a month of it. Hina was the least prone to violent outbursts during her recovery, and about a month and a half in, the investigators and her mother, Hiyori, decided to make a very difficult decision. Hiyori Hada and the parents of Nori and Miwa spoke to investigators about sending their daughters in, wired with trackers, cameras, mics, back to the park. Investigators warned them about every potential danger associated with making this decision, but all three seemed to understand it perfectly well. They knew what they were doing. In Hiyori's words, unless someone did something, there was no guarantee that they wouldn't all be back in the hospital, doing the withdrawal process all over again with all these other children if no conclusion was reached.
That's very brave.
It is very brave. I cannot say I would ever be that brave to send my little baby into active battle.
I get what they mean, though, because if they don't catch this guy, her daughter is just as at risk.
Yeah. Yeah, he clearly already knows who she is.
Exactly.
And could easily track her down. Big Hippo sees you, so.
Big Hippo is charging.
Big Hippo has his eyes just above the water, and he sees you.
He is lumbering out of the water. He's on his way. Hippos. A lot of people think that hippos are plant eaters.
I like that you headcanon this guy as having like an absurd amount of hippo knowledge, where he just knows like a ton about hippos because he's named Hippo.
A lot of people assume that hippos only eat plants, but I know hippos are omnivores. I think. Wait, let me Google that. Are hippos omnivores? I think they are.
They yes. are.
Okay.
They're primarily herbivores. Too many dead ends had been hit for her, and if her child was going to recover, they needed to know how they and all of these other children were getting their hands on the drugs. The only thing worse than one recovery process was two. Investigators took the parents in for a statement to city officials, who, after extensive thought, granted permission to send the three in as moles. There were many precautions set, though. The girls were taught to use a small, paralyzing dart, which was discreetly, quote-unquote, left behind. As expected, all three of them took the bait and hit it. They were going to be monitored and recorded the entire time, and if anything was compromised, the law was going to get involved, with enough evidence or not. There were to be two highly trained undercover officers to follow them, equipped with all they'd need to commit a murder should someone attempt to hurt the girls. The girls were told that the wires were to help them recover, and that the hospital would get alerted if they were to pull them out. With every precaution set, all three were instructed to take their daughters home and let them go about their normal day. Hina, Nori, and Miwa, released back to the town, opted not to go to school. Despite not being allowed to converse before leaving the hospital, all three of them met up in front of the school and decided to skip it. They ran to the park as fast as they could, keywords being thrown around as though they had made decisions that none of them would have made 4 months ago. They didn't wait to cross the road, they pushed past people, they ran through bike lanes, their movements were erratic at best. When they got to the park, they promptly crossed the street, weaving between alleyways, until they waited in a residential area that was not as busy as the commercial roads. They didn't say much at that point, simply panted, exhausted from their journey. It took about 15 minutes, but eventually, a white van rolled up on the street.
It's the Hipmobile.
Oh, God.
Is he back? Is it a big hippo? It's my favorite character.
The three girls began waving their hands rapidly, calling for Big Hippo as they followed the van, which slowed to a stop. The window rolled down, and what looked to be a teenage boy leaned out, looking down at them. He looked around suspiciously before asking where they had been, and the three girls began chattering away at how they'd been to the hospital, talking over each other like they couldn't hear their own friends. When they eventually settled down, he asked one question. Do you want some candy? The girls hurriedly nodded, and he banged his hand against the van. A teenage girl pulled the door open from the inside, and he instructed them to get in. The three crawled in eagerly, and the door was pulled shut. The old white van pittered off, and the three were not offered candy.
I would like to relate this back to our last episode when we were talking about how, this is not the same universe or anything like that, but we had mentioned how teenagers can often be involved in crimes against children against their will when we were talking about Annie Cosgrave, and
yes,
that's what I suspect is going on here.
Yes, probably.
I think that these poor teenagers are just another clod of grass under Big Hippo's
foot. What's a hippo foot called?
I don't know. I was going to say paw, and then I was like, that's not right.
No, look at their feet!
Wait. Send me a picture.
They have hippo hooves.
Hooves?
Yeah, I'm sending you a picture right now.
Oh. Oh, God. Oh, I'm all done looking at that. Thank you, though.
The teenage girl handed them bits of crushed up candies, recognized by Miwa's whining about how little they got. As Ozaru had guessed, she said to get the rest, the 8-year-old said that they'd have to do something big for the candy, since they'd been gone for so long. They tried to argue, but to no avail. She said that if they wanted candy, they'd have to prove their loyalty. No more messy chores, no more upsetting their parents, she said. The girls began to whine once more before she threatened them with violence to be quiet. However, with no movements made to hurt them, they were allowed to continue on their mission. The van continued on until reaching an old warehouse in which all three of them entered through a broken-down back entrance, just large enough for someone their size to get into. The teenagers went in through a code-locked door. The children were led by new figures at that point and told that one of their friends was talking about Big Hippo to their families, so they had to learn better. The only way to do that, they said, was to hurt them. It was up to Hina, Nori, and Miwa to torture another child into obedience and then send them out into the fighting ring. Then they could have candy.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Big Hippo does not fuck around.
Big Hippo is stomping his fucking hooves.
Big Hippo is charging. He is.
He's going for it.
What the hell? Okay. Continue.
This was not kindly received by the authorities, who stormed the premises with great success. The scene had just about everything horrific that a child should never have been allowed to see. Based on the setting alone and the children they'd recovered, they were able to tell that they'd had child fighting rings. There were duropoline trees. There were bodies in freezers, people that had been tortured, children that had been lured into doing it all. The teenagers and adults on scene were arrested promptly, whilst every child on scene was brought to a hospital.
Were the teenagers not brought to hospitals?
Teenagers have more free will than children, so they brought them to the jail. But their sentence is covered later.
Oh, but they're not hurt.
Yeah, we'll talk about the teenagers later.
Okay. I thought the teenagers were also in this fighting ring, and I was like, well, if they are hurt, they are still minors.
So, the teenagers were involved in a lot of the violence. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of them have different roles, and that's
okay,
clear.
Well, we'll get there then. I'm...
Yeah.
I assumed they were hurt and then just, like, taken to jail, and I was like, that's illegal for an adult.
No. The trial was held whilst they waited for the children to recover. Those that had been in school at that point in time had been later found, as they seized one of the vans that they used and found them that way. Their schools had been warned and became hypervigilant about personality changes. Some were false reports, but eventually they settled down and all reports were false reports. After the children had the drugs flushed out of their system and all were on their way to recovery, they were interviewed, not by law enforcement, but by their parents. The officers involved in the case said that with the distrust that must have been instilled with them in regards to the law, it was best to go a familial route. Parents were instructed to handle the situation in the way that they saw fit. Hiyori told her daughter that she knew about everything that had happened, and Hina began to cry. She apologized profusely to her mother and tried to explain how much she liked the candy. Hiyori promptly told her daughter that she was not in trouble, that people much bigger than her were in trouble. However, she would be in trouble if she were to do it again. Hina seemed to think that was okay and settled down. She calmly explained that what the people were doing was wrong, and Hina expressed that she knew. She wasn't really excited to do it, she said, she just really wanted the candy. She said that it was really scary, but she would have rather been scared than to not have the candy. Hiyori then asked her to describe what she had been asked to do, so she could help those evil people go to prison for a very long time. The list of what Hina responded with was extensive. She had handed candy to other kids, helped spread information about where to get more candy, she had weapons, handled guns, she had once shot someone in the leg, and she had once tricked another child involved in the organization into the fighting ring. She had been at these fighting rings as well and found them uncomfortable.
Oh, God.
She was never in the ring, but she was there.
No!
Yeah. I'd also like to remind the audience, part of Duopauline is that it is hypnotic. She is doing things in the name of the drug. So when she's doing these things and recognizing that there's wrong, there is part of her that can't not do it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was just a simple addiction case, that would be enough, but there is a hypnotic element to this. The trial went quickly, as the evidence was stacked against them. As there was no death penalty in their court of law, they were sentenced to remain in high-security prison for the rest of their lives. Not for a life sentence, but until they died, they were to be in high-security prison. They could not go to low security. They were not allowed to interact with children, even if they were their own. They were going to be there until they died. Slight interjection, a life sentence in our world does not always mean until you die.
Yeah.
Which is very weird that they
were. Which is stupid. Like, they should have named it something else.
Yeah, like a 40-year sentence. Why didn't they name it that?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But if I was, I'd have done it better.
Just go by year. Don't give them names. The teenagers involved had been kids raised in the crime ring that the kids that were recovered had been in. Due to this reason, they were each sentenced to go to a psychiatric-based prison until they had reached the age of 22, in which their doctors would make a case as to if they should reenter society or not. The children involved in the case were mandated to attend therapy 5 times a week until 5 years had passed. It would then decrease to 3 for the following 2 years. Their therapist at that point would be allowed to make a schedule based on their needs. However, the children were required to be in therapy until they were 22 as well. 22, in case you all have not realized, is their age of adulthood.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the audience will be pleased to know that Hina and Hiyori went on to live normal lives once more. It took them a while, and nothing would ever be the same again, but the Hata family eventually found a new regular. Hina was not allowed to walk on her own until she had graduated school, which was quite embarrassing for her, but she understood why it was happening and eventually let it go. Though life never has a happily ever after, it is safe to say that although it was horrible, it had happened and they were able to move on with their lives. In the end, they got to be happy, even if happiness came with some obstacles to overcome.
Wait, so who's Big Hippo? What happened to Big Hippo?
Big Hippo was, in fact, the leader of the crime organization that they were under. He was arrested and is in prison for life.
You should write an episode all about that.
Big Hippo.
We will never get through reading.
No, we won't. It'll be like, it'll be a 3-page episode. It will be less than 1,000 words. And it'll be our longest episode yet.
Yeah.
Yes, so Big Hippo and the associated adults were all charged with the same sentence, essentially.
Spoiler alert for the hippo episode. Hunting hippo, that's what you can call it.
The teenagers did go to a psychiatric prison, but it's more of a hospitalization situation where they were like, you've been addicted to this hypnotic, addictive drug for literally all of your life. We need to get you off of this and retrained. Because they've been trained. They've been groomed, essentially, to do this one thing their whole life. They were being raised to be the next hippo.
That's so sad for them.
They were to follow in his hoofsteps.
They were the hipplets.
The hipplets.
I don't know what a baby hippo is called. I don't care. They're hipplets to me.
Oh, they're hippo calves. That's not really fun. But the teenagers were... Psychiatric prison isn't what it's like in our world, so I just wanted to make it clear that teenagers were well cared for. There was a lot of empathy given to them. All right, that is all for today. Thank you for listening. Send in your thoughts, theories, questions, and comments to untruecrimethepodcast@gmail.com, all lowercase, for a chance to be featured at the end of the season during our Q&A. Watch out for big hippos, and goodbye!
Hippo says it's time to go. Bye-bye.
Rock-a-bye hippo calf from the treetop.
Night night comes right down from hippo. The hippo does not sleep tonight, but you will.
Hippos' foraging and activities usually happen during the night. They leave their resting waters near dusk and return in the morning. The hippo will return in the morning.
Sleep well. Remember, hippo can see you.